1490 WGCH, WGCH.com anywhere. WGCH News Center Time 751. First Thursday of each month, we check in with State Representative Tina Korpis of Greenwich. Monthly legislative update. Good morning, Representative. How are you? Oop, hang on a second. Representative Korpis, good morning. How are you doing?
Fine, thank you, Tony. How are you?
I'm okay. Well, how's your summer going? What have you been working on this summer?
Oh, the summer's been wonderful. Thank you. Well, you know, the legislative session in Hartford ended on June 4th. So when we're not in session, I have been spending time working on things to prepare for the 2026 session and also reaching out and having the conversations with my constituents and learning more about issues that I really want to dive into more fully when the session reconvenes. I worked a lot on the special education bill, so I'm spending time at special education schools and with providers to see how we can serve Connecticut better. And I've been spending a lot of time with businesses in the district to find out how we can make Connecticut a more business-friendly state.
Okay. What other things have you been talking about? The so-called Big Beautiful Bill. What's happening with that and its impact on Connecticut?
you know, as state legislators, we are the middle child. The federal level does the legislation that impacts us here in Connecticut on a federal level. The municipal government of Greenwich and Stamford impacts the things that are at the local level, and we're right in the middle. So people ask me about the Big Beautiful Bill, but I really can't affect it. I really don't have a particular view on it. Like other citizens, I see what I read, but I can tell you what the state response has been. And I really appreciate the question because I think there's a little bit of misunderstanding about this, or at least a lack of understanding about what our state has done to respond. So I read what other people read about cuts to our state budget that will result from the Big Beautiful Bill. And what I can say about those is that in the 973 roughly page budget that the state of Connecticut passed in this legislative session, for which I did not vote because I believed it was a fiscally irresponsible budget, there was a provision buried in there, which it surprises me that people aren't talking about, but nonetheless is in there. And that provision says basically that, not basically, I have it in front of me and I'm reading from it, whenever the federal government passes into law any regular or supplemental appropriations bill that reduces the amount of federal funds to be provided by the state during the fiscal years 2025 to 2027, the Secretary of the Office of Policy Management, that's a state-level official, needs to propose an appropriations budget for how we're going to make up that shortfall. So there is a mechanism in our state budget that was passed and signed into law by the governor, which is a fail-safe and really provides that there will be a plan in case federal funding is cut. Now, and that will happen regardless of when during the year that federal cut is identified by the Office of Policy, Office of Policy and Management. So I sit on the Appropriations Committee. We met 2 days ago on another matter. We're meeting pretty much all day today on matters related to the state, and no such trigger has happened yet. So I just wanted people to be aware of that and that we have something in our budget, which actually this is one provision of the budget that I do like, which provides a backstop for us and provides a path and a plan to make up any shortfalls. So I really want people to be aware of that provision because it's not getting any airtime, but it's right there in black and white.
All right. I was speaking with State Representative Tina Korpis of Greenwich, and let's talk about some other things, working to make Connecticut's business climate more attractive, something a lot of people have talked about. What's going on?
Well, you know, I proposed a bill this year, which got farther than it's ever gotten before in the legislature, and I want to focus on it again in 2026. For example, I have two constituents who are CPAs, and they approached me about this. When you're a CPA practicing in Connecticut, you have to file an annual licensing fee. And in Connecticut, that costs $565 a year. So I took a look at other northeastern states, and it turns out the next highest fee is $183 in New Hampshire. The lowest fee in the tri-state area is $45 in New Jersey. So we're more than 10 times New Jersey. And, you know, I have a CPA who's a retired older person in the district, and he's, you know, making money in his retirement, and that's a big number for him. I also have a woman who runs a CPA firm in Stamford, and she has to pay that license fee for everyone in her firm. So we ought to get more in line with the states around us, because the revenue impact of such a change will be really nominal and insignificant, whereas the individual impact on the CPAs can be significant. So things like that, I think, can go far. Other things I've learned, because I've spent a lot of time with the businesses in the 149th, are things like, you know, we have a pretty onerous, it sounds very arcane, but it matters. If you're a grocery store trying to open in Connecticut, which I have in my district, a grocery store that's going to be opening shortly, it occupied the site of a prior grocery store, but you have to go through a lengthy process just to rehook up a sewer system, which was already functioning in the prior owner. That's taken months for this new owner of a grocery store. And in the state of New York, no such process exists. You simply either keep it hooked up or you can get it hooked up with no barrier. So that's another, I would call it, micro thing that I could work on at the state level and plan to work on just to make things easier for business owners. What I haven't done yet and plan to do in the remainder of the summer and fall is really go to larger businesses in the district, people that employ 500 to 1,000 workers, and get some more macro ideas of how the state can attract employers like that, because small businesses really power us and make our lives and are very important to the state's economy. But I want to hear from the people that employ large numbers of folks that would cause a, you know, 30 to 35-year-old to move with his or her family into the state and throw the long ball for their future. So that's my next project.
All right. And real quick, we're running out of time, but there's talk of a special session. I'm getting mixed signals on what it's going to be about. Democrats have said it's going to be about reaction to federal funding or movements from the federal government. Republicans have said it's going to be about housing. What's going on here?
I'm getting mixed signals, too, Tony. So when the Governor Lamont vetoed HB 5002, which was the omnibus housing bill, I very much supported his veto of that. There was talk that that bill is coming back in a special session, that maybe the most onerous parts of it, fair share, and the parking requirements will be taken out of it, but that bill will be back. So that is what I heard was going to be the subject of the special session. But then I was communicating with other housing committee folks this week, and they said, there's so much back and forth negotiation about that bill, it may not come back in a special session. So that's what I know about housing. With respect to federal cuts, you know, I just read to you the provision in our budget that was passed, which says how we will handle federal cuts. And as we sit here today on August 7th, the Office of Policy and Management has not put forth a proposal to make up any shortfall in federal cuts. So that process is not kicked into gear yet, to my knowledge. So I don't have a good answer for you on that.
All right, State Representative Tina Corpus, thanks very much for your time. Always appreciate it. We'll talk to you again next month.
Thank you so much, Tony. Take care.
State Representative Tina Corpus.